I'm CBS 19 Chief Meteorologist Travis Koshko for Seaville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Thank you, Travis. His forecast brought to you by Comfort Source. WCHV time is 7:07. So here's a question for you about the revenue sharing agreement. And I found both of these coming into the automated office systems inbox. Concern over whether the state should dictate to local governments what they do. Well, look up Dillon Rule. But the other one is there's a lot of folks who love the idea of forcing the county and city to renegotiate the revenue sharing agreement, just not this particular board of supervisors and city council. I'm sorry, it's a timing is everything. And the author of the bill that has now passed both the House and Senate, it is sitting on Dr. Northam's desk waiting for his signature, is Delegate Steve Landis. Good morning, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Joe, good to be with you once again.
A reminder for the reality tour of this. Your bill just indicates that any revenue or economic development negotiative agreement has to be revisited at a period of time. You can't just write one that's open-ended like our Charlottesville-Albemarle revenue sharing agreement that's in perpetuity, correct?
Well, the legislation does that for Albemarle and Charlottesville, and what the other part of the bill does is basically say that there needs to be reporting on all the revenue sharing agreements, economic development revenue sharing agreements, so that the public has an idea of kind of what's being accomplished related to those agreements and if the agreement specifics are being met.
How is it living up to its original premise? I think that's what most people in Charlottesville and Albemarle want to see done. What about, and I know we've talked about this, but for those joining us in progress, the one place fiscally anyway that the revenue sharing agreement is problematic is as it comes to the composite index. Charlottesville schools get more than they should, and Albemarle schools get less than they should from the composite index. I guess it comes down to the devil is in the details when the city council and the board of supervisors sit down to discuss this. That would have to be addressed, I guess, first and foremost.
I would think that would be, from the county standpoint, would be one of the main things they would want to discuss. I know, Delegate Rob Bell's had and made an effort, and I worked with him several years ago to see if we could get something done just on the composite index between the county and the city, and unfortunately we weren't successful. So at least with this, they will have to sit down and discuss, and hopefully that will provide some transparency on kind of where the city and the county are, and maybe it'll lead to some at least renegotiation or possibly opening up what the city can do to assist the county, since at this point I would think as a representative of the county that is a real concern and has been for many citizens.
Well, and I think it's important to remind, and Rob has always done a great job of reminding us of this as well. There's an awful lot that the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County do together that a lot of municipalities don't do together. SWAT teams, fire rescue agreements, things like that, that if you just tore up the revenue sharing agreement without any sort of discussions as to what goes where and how, K-Tech, the Technical Education Center, things like that, would really be left in the lurch if there wasn't an adult in the room making sure that it's not just about who contributes more to this joint checking account.
You're exactly right, Joe. And I think sometimes we forget that they do cooperate in many ways. But, you mentioned the composite index and the impact on schools. That's a big concern. And there are probably other areas that they could cooperate on much more readily than they're doing now. And maybe this will open that discussion as well.
Now, you also had a bill going back. I should ask, of import. Have you discussed this with Governor Northam? And what do you think his view on this bill would be?
Well, it, you know, in the final result, it came out fairly strongly from both the House and Senate, and, you know, David Toscano worked with me on it. I think everybody, whether you represent the city or the county, wants to see them talk about this and at least get to the table and start having a dialogue, because that's been one of the impasses that's been frustrating. So I would think the governor would, you know, look at that and think that, you know, that's probably a good thing. The first part of the bill, as I mentioned, is just a transparency issue. I don't think anybody should be opposed to having the public be able to see kind of where those agreements are and how they're working. And in the case of Albemarle and Charlottesville, I think everybody agrees that it can't hurt for them to sit down and really, you know, have a dialogue and to start discussing what they might be able to do to address the concerns that I think many citizens, especially in Albemarle, have.
Yeah, and I think that's where you get that bipartisan support from it for it, Steve, is that you, as far as I can tell, the rhetoric always seems to run towards transparency and being able to say, here's what's going on and where we stand with this. On that level, and we're coming up on a break, but I want to ask you about a couple of other things. Number one, you have a bill regarding campus free speech that we've talked about in the past, and that's been passed by both House and Senate. But on a more abstract level, beyond just the legislation that you've authored, there's the Medicaid expansion in the budget, as well as some other legislative issues going on around the Commonwealth. So can we hang on to you for another segment and talk about that when we come back?
Be glad to, Joe.
SteveLandis.com is where you find him online. Delegate Steve Landis on Joe Thomas in the Morning. WCHV Time 7:13.
Oh, you found it. The place where you can find Washington Wizards basketball on the radio. Right here, where you might just hear.
For three, it's there! Oh, it's there!
Friday night at 7:45, the Wizards are in New Orleans.
Join me, Dave Johnson, and Glenn Consor as we bring you John Wall and the Washington Wizards all season long right here
in Central Virginia on Seaville 107.5 at 1260 WCHV AM and FM Charlottesville.
I rail against the cruel, but you know they I guess it, when you write your programming philosophy into a hit record, that's, you know, sometimes the price. I don't know if some people think it's cruel. Read online, you'll see all sorts of horrible things written about your humble host. Joining us on the Newsmakers line is a delegate from the 25th district representing Western Albemarle on into the Shenandoah Valley, Steve Landis. We've been talking about his bill regarding the revenue sharing agreement. You also have one regarding free speech on campuses, and we have a campus here. I'm sorry, we have grounds nearby. Will your bill cover UVA if they don't call it a campus?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Whether it's the grounds or campus, I would think the university would be covered as well.
It's sad you have to write a law that protects free speech, since we have like the Mac Daddy of them. It's called the First Amendment. But explain again what your bill will do regarding free speech, dissenting speech, different speech, variety of speech on college campuses.
Well, Joe, in the last couple of years, we've actually set out who should be protected, and it just reiterates, obviously, the First Amendment, but we make sure that students, faculty, staff, and invited speakers are included in that, and that universities have a policy to do so. Now, with this legislation this year, what we're doing is saying they need to post that information on the policy so that students are fully aware of that, staff and faculty, and that they report to the General Assembly on any incidences that may occur, and especially where there might be a suit that's brought against the university related to a free speech issue. So it's just more about transparency. We actually worked with the Attorney General's office and university councils for different institutions, and making sure that it would be something that one would apply and apply equally to all institutions of higher learning, but then also be something that they could do and report as part of their normal processes as well.
Steve, I have to ask this since it's, you know, 5 days now and counting still 864, many of them in the 25th district, you know, still without electricity from Dominion. And I know we've talked earlier in the session about this controversial bill. A lot of people are derisively calling it the Dominion Protection Act and things like that, where Dominion and Appalachian Power can not pay back overcharges if they're reinvesting it into things like burying power lines. And it, has the zeal for or against this bill changed in light of the storm that blew through here Thursday and Friday and left so many without power for so long?
No, I don't think at this point. I think, you know, both sides are pretty much in their same corners, so to speak. But you know, there's some good things with the bill, and hardening or improving the grid, I think, is one of those things. You know, the reason that I think a lot of us, Joe, continue not to support it is we have the State Corporation Commission that's supposed to have the responsibility to review these rates and any kind of change in rates for both Dominion Electric, Dominion Energy, and APCO, or Appalachian Electric and Power. So why have that institution and those three judges if they're not going to have that responsibility? And unfortunately, this bill does not go far enough, in my estimation, of restoring that authority. And that's supposed to be a check and balance in our system of government, but more importantly, a check and balance on the these large public utilities. And but again, like I said, there's always good and bad in legislation. Unfortunately, I thought the bad outweighed the good in this case.
Well, no, and certainly I just think it's became front of mind for an awful lot of folks as they wonder how much longer their generator can hold out for. Let's go into the Medicaid expansion discussion and, you know, where that stands right now as we head into this final week of budget wrangling. The conferees were picked, seven of them picked from the Senate and six from the House. You aren't one of them, unfortunately, Steve. Tell us about who the Senate and House conferees are and what you think that means towards Medicaid expansion in the budget between the Senate and the House versions.
Well, unlike past years, the Senate is seems to be not in favor of expansion at this point and holding fast. Unfortunately, from my standpoint, the House did go along and include Medicaid expansion in, in the House budget. Our conferees are led by Chairman Chris Jones, Chairman of our House Appropriations Committee, and then Luke Torian, who's been on the senior Democrat who's been on the conference committee, but everybody else is brand new. We have a what I would say the farm team has been brought up to the big leagues, so to speak.
A lot of fresh faces.
When you look at how important the work that the conference committee does, the Senate, on the other hand, has all veterans, folks that have been in the big leagues before. So it'll be interesting to see how they match up and how they do. You know, the big concern, I think, for the majority of the House Republican caucuses, we didn't support our budget for the first time ever. And we've sided more with our Senate colleagues in the Senate Republican caucus in this case. But there is a minority of our caucus that has supported expansion, and obviously all the Democrats. So that's where we are at this point. But they're still working.
Yeah, we visited with David Toscano on Friday as well as Nick Freitas. Nick didn't tell us he was going to make such an impassioned speech later in the day about gun control. But, you know, we talked about the Medicaid expansion. Even David seemed like he thought that this was going to be a problem, given the fact that Mick Mulvaney at the Office of Management and Budget said you guys shouldn't be, as you and I talked about, that the federal government was already cutting a lot of this support money from other things. The idea that they were going to keep feeding the Medicaid expansion was a fool's errand, and Mulvaney went and said the same thing.
Well, and the other concern, Joe, I think, is every state. In fact, Arkansas now is trying to institute and, I think, gotten approval for a work requirement. That was a key component and the reason a lot of the Republicans that voted for Medicaid expansion in the House and the House budget supported it. Now the governor said, wait a minute, I'm not all all that keen on the work requirement and would support just straight out expansion. So that, I think, concerns a lot of us. It seems like the governor is somewhat going back on his agreement with the Republicans. And, you know, at this point, nobody knows what's going to happen, but it is concerning. And
well,
the bottom line is the federal government, you know, long term will not have those funds.
Yeah, well, it's also good to know it before you start negotiating that the governor is going to pull a Lucy to your Charlie Brown there. Last one, any discussions? I know that we just had a law enforcement get together last night, a bunch of our law enforcement leadership regarding school security. It's nice to see that in this maelstrom of passion after Parkland, Florida, that school security has been what a lot of the local principals have been talking about, the school superintendents, more than more restrictive gun laws, and even some of the parents out of Parkland are saying that. What is the latest out of the General Assembly before we let you go, Steve, about that?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about that, Joe, and the Democratic caucus wanted to try to resurrect bills related to that. The unfortunate part is the deadline had already passed for consideration of those bills, and there isn't anything else that's out there that could be done. We did last year pass legislation that puts in place the opportunity for our local school systems to hire retired police officers to come and provide additional security if they so deem that necessary. And I would encourage superintendents across the state to look at that and look at that as an option for them, especially where there aren't resource officers in the schools, and there are many schools that don't have resource officers. I think that's a good option. And there are a lot of great retired law enforcement officers that I'm sure would be willing to do that part-time and provide that security and additional protection for our children.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you for visiting with us this morning, and I'll talk to you very soon, and you have a great morning. Good luck with
you
the
too,
conference.
Thank you.